Welcome to the Along Come Norwich podcast, a preposterously posturing porpoise of impenetrable football pod pancastron, where for the last five seasons there hasn't been a single name said in more positive terms, more prominently than one Teemu Pukki. Hannah, Edie and John join me to look forward to an emotional farewell on Monday. Hannah, will it be emotional? Will the ITV4 cameras cut to you crying in the stands? Or will a total bonfire of the squad around Teemu remove too much emotion from the game?
Ooh, it will. I will be emotional. I'm sure everyone else will be emotional. I hope he plays. I mean, that's my current fear. I am coming back to the game. I feel like he has to, surely. I mean, but I don't know. I think he has to. I'd have some serious questions if he doesn't. I mean, why wouldn't you? I don't really get that. There's nothing left to play for. It's a day, you know, the one positive of it can be that it's a day all about him and to celebrate him. So I would be very confused if he doesn't start. I think it will be emotional, but I also think I feel like I knew it was coming. I don't think it's a surprise. And in a weird way, I feel like I've been preparing for this moment for the last, you know, four or five seasons, because football is pain, you know. Football is constant endings, constant renewal. The moment you kind of start to realise how important the player is, I think is exactly the moment that you start wondering what's going to happen next and who will be able to replace them. Especially at a club like ours, unfortunately, where we do have to sell players quite a lot. So I'm ready for it. I'm glad that the whole day can be about him. And there's not really anything overshadowing it beyond, like you say, the dumpster fire that is the rest of the team and the season. But apart from that, it can all be about him, which I think is what he deserves.
Okay. Have you been pre-grieving too, Edie? Or are you worried that you might be overcome when it comes to 4:45 or 4:49 p.m. and actually it's all over, his career's finished at Norwich?
Well, the thing is, I think he's been preparing us for it for quite some time. Like, you know how you get your small children ready, like, for the time that comes when they have to go to school and go to big school all by themselves. That's kind of like what he's been doing for us.
What, by not scoring anymore? So we're not used to seeing him on the score sheet.
Just being like, here's some other people. They can do it. Which is, I don't know. Like, it's obviously he's not had the most satisfying season, has he? And I think everyone saw him not getting assisted in the way he needs assistance. And after a while, it makes sense that he might go somewhere where they're prepared to feed him more goals that are in kind of the right position for him to touch them with his foot.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely cat, you know, that goes sort of two or three doors down for a nicer dinner than the one that is being provided.
Exactly. Yes. You know, I mean, he's not going to be, you know, like our darling Timmy Kroll shouting and you know, like old goalkeepers like to do. That's fair. But he's never a shouter, is he? Like, he might look a little bit peeved if he doesn't get the support he needs. So he's a man of action, not words. Let's face it.
How are you holding up, punt, emotionally?
Yeah, emotionally I'm all right. I think as Hannah's just said, we've had a lot of time to get used to this, and we've speculated on this pod about, you know, should we give him three more years? But that we've all known in our heart of hearts that he wanted to go last summer. We didn't let him because we thought we'd have a chance back at, you know, get a promotion. And so I think I'm sad, but I'm sad because of the way it's ended, not because he's leaving. And it is, I think it's been a real dereliction of duty in terms of the football club not providing him with the requisite people around him to, as Edie's just said, to feed him, to make sure that he went out. Look, he goes out a Norwich legend, but if he could have gone out on 100 goals and firing us back to the Premier League, or even just firing us into the top six, and we had a lovely, enjoyable season where it culminated in maybe like a playoff semi-final loss, but we all had lots of fun, And Timu was smiling rather than Timu was cutting the frustrated figure that he's cut for the last 6 months, or I think it's 7 months since he scored at Carrow Road, then it would have all felt right in the world. And it doesn't. It feels like legends shouldn't be let down in this way. The last time that a legend left this football club, or left football club in a worse way, was probably Darren Huckabee. And look, we're not giving him the Rhoda treatment. He will get a proper send off on Monday, and I'm really pleased about that. But it's just sad that sadness because it's ended like this.
I think the fact that Blackpool are already down might help in terms of the atmosphere might be a bit more carnivalous. You know, they might be a bit more beach balls and inflatables than otherwise they might be if they were biting fingernails and looking at results elsewhere. So that might help a little bit. Going on the atmosphere, though, we have to touch on the potential protest on Monday. That 2 o'clock, there's the bedsheet brigade are out again at the director's box. We don't know. We haven't had it confirmed by any sources what, whether it might be duvet this time, might be some pillowcase flags. We haven't had that on any good. I haven't triple sourced that information. Hannah, do you think there's any chance that if that is well attended, it might sour things, that might spill into the stands if there's negativity like that? Which, let's have it right, I understand why people are going to football cross at the moment, but do you think that there's any chance that might spoil things a bit and result in there not being such a positive outpouring of love for Timu from kickoff?
I hope not. I hope that most people who will be at the game are there. I've seen a lot of people say, I wouldn't bother going if it weren't for it being Timu's last game. And so I think most of the people who will be there for that reason, and they won't be there. The people who really want to make their point probably aren't coming. And I think having a protest beforehand is also good, because it means that, they get their chance to have their say and make their point. But then hopefully once the game, kicks off, it can just be all about Timu, and it doesn't have to spill into that occasion. Is what I would hope. Who knows if it actually turns out that way? But
I think they need to. My concern, based on the last couple of home games, particularly the last one, is that they need to. Sounds really silly, but they need to win. Like, they need to be winning. I think that if the negativity is disarmed by not even a good performance, but a one where us and Blackpool don't care, but we don't care slightly less than they don't care, and we end up being a couple of goals up, then effectively that would neutralise that, and the focus more can be on team, especially obviously if he gets on the score sheet. Edie, what would you say if you had a WhatsApp group with the main protagonists of the protest at 2 o'clock? What would your messaging be to them in terms of how they're intending on conducting themselves?
Well, I mean, to some extent, I think this season there are so many different groups that have gone in different directions that I don't think there's necessarily any point in urging unity or just a basic use of adults' grasp of emotions. But really, I can see that there may well be some bad vibes from this, because we haven't lost Pookie for a good reason, and it does all fit in with all of this. So the minute we start to see Pookie waving, and then all the memories, the good memories, come back, that will trigger some bad feelings, because no good memories are getting made right now. So I kind of, I don't think this protest is going to be any more than the number of corners on the duvet in terms of people, one to hold each corner. I don't think there's enough energy or real kind of fire about it this time. I think it's like everyone's just at this stage, they know they'd be yelling at clouds. What can be done? What can be changed? absolutely nothing before when they were doing it. It could well be of some sort of direction had been found to maybe rectify what was going on. But we've got to the end of the journey of where this stupid clown car was going. So,
well, so, yeah,
what can you do?
However, I think maybe they're cross at the person at the wheel, the constantly collapsing wheel with the airbag going off every 5 minutes. You know, that person will still be driving next year. So punt. What say you? Are we saying, go and have a big belly ache at let's have it right. A pair of double doors with a couple of people in, with a couple
like,
of people.
Look, come on, Michael Wynne Jones is always out there with a fag on. Like whenever you walk past, he's always there having a ciggy. So you know he might be up for a conversation about it. In all seriousness, I would absolutely support people's right to protest, given everything that's going on in this country right now. However, do we have a pretty well-run football club? And I'm not talking about like player recruitment. Have we signed the right players? Like, do we have like a functioning business, you know, in terms of a model that many clubs still stare at and go, oh, look, that's quite good. I wish we were a bit like Norwich. Yes, we do. So in my mind, does that mean that we should have supporters protesting for Delia and Michael to sell up, which is probably going to be part of the protest? Probably not. Look, you know, the failure is very much in football in terms of this season. We've had the second or third biggest budget in the Championship, and we have failed with our stated ambitions. So I can only see that the subject of people's ire would be the man at the wheel. And we know how that protest went last time. Like, it was a little bit of, he's not worth it, Stu, and having to be pulled away, you know, which isn't going to be good for anyone. So I think, look, let's just make Monday all about Pookie. We will be doing our best to do that. So I think it's probably fair to say that if you're in the middle couple of blocks of the Barclay, you might have your view impaired for a few minutes prior to kickoff, because we want to say something to Timu. So, you know, everyone who's in the Barclay that's able to assist with that, we thank you for that. But yeah, let's just give him the proper send-off that he deserves and forget about protests, because they can all be done on another day. Or if you really, as Hannah said, want to make a point, just don't come, because actually I think that's where the club will probably start feeling it, is people not renewing, people not turning up, not having the commercial match day revenue that they rely on. And then I think that might make a more meaningful statement than, I don't know, 50 or 60 people stood outside the director's entrance. I think that easily gets minimized and seen as a vocal minority by people within the club.
So let's focus on Pookie. Let's really think about some memories of Timu and what I was hoping that everyone would be able to enjoy by listening to this podcast ahead of the game, is thinking back to some favourite goals and some favourite memories and maybe a few things that you hadn't thought of for a while when you go through that mental Rolodex of images of you know, the tongue-out finisher that he is. So, Hannah, give me a particular goal that kind of floods into your memory when you're thinking about that wonderful Finnish wizard.
The one that I always think of, and I don't think this is one that hopefully anyone else will say or think of, because I don't think it's a sort of particularly spectacular or important one, but it's just, I feel like it's just quintessential Pookie, and in particular the 18-19 season. And I watched it back. I have a very clear image of it whenever I think about it, but I watched it back yesterday as well, just to make sure that I remembered all correctly. And it's the one, I think it was the first goal against Bolton when we won 4-0.
Yes.
And it's a lovely move. Oh, no.
It's my goal. Let's celebrate it together, Hannah.
Okay. Oh,
you only got 85 others now to choose from, 86.
You know what? I did have a backup as well, so you should have gone first. And I'm like, anyway. But I'm glad you also agree that that's a very consensual goal, because, yeah, I love the build-up play is amazing. It's such a classic it's like Jamal's involved and Stevie's involved and Tribal's involved, and it's like all of that, you know, that classic sort of core team from that season. And then I think it's a sort of Stevie plays him in, and he takes like four touches. It's one touch to control the ball, two touches to control the ball, and then he sort of checks back on his left foot and completely wrong foots the defender and the goalkeeper. And then he kind of just pops it in, curls it in at the near post. And it's such a, he's so like economical and he's so precise, and he never puts any sort of extra energy into anything because he doesn't need to, you know, he calculates it all so well. And that's why it all looks so sort of effortless and laid back, because yeah, he just, it's like he knows exactly what he needs to do, the exact movement. And I just think that goal sums it up really perfectly, and I really like it. I could watch it over and over again.
I love that as a choice, because I actually think that performance was that evokes so much of that era. I mean, they weren't having a very positive season, Bolton, but you know, we went away from home and just walked all over teams at times, and that, you know, that was Farker Ball at its best. And I remember I actually watched the video summary of one of the Bolton fans, that they, you know, they did some kind of video reaction thing to each of the goals going in, and they did it for reaction to all goals, but as it happened there were only Norwich goals that day. And it was just one of those times when it took me back to, I used to consume all content. So, and this is a thing about Pookie would score goals that you'd want to watch again and again and again and again and again and again. And you would watch it from the Norwich angle, and then you'd watch, and then you'd want to listen to all of the Norwich podcasts talk about it. And then you would want to see all of the journalists write about it. And then you would go on The Athletic and see what they say. And then you would go on to the national media and see what they said about it. And I think Pookie was like put in those performances and was part, he will always be synonymous with being kind of the spearhead of the time when there couldn't be enough Norwich City content. I would read it all, and I had the same number of kids I've got now, same amount of responsibilities that I have now, etc. But you know, that is just such a great example of a game where you just think, I can watch those highlights 17 times on repeat. Edie, give us a goal.
I have no specific goal. My favourite goals were the ones that Pookie scored during lockdown.
Okay.
I was never happier watching him scoring goals during lockdown with nobody there, because he seemed to enjoy it 10 times more.
That's interesting.
It's like, you know, when you just see a dog that's absolutely in its pure element and is just as happy as anything and running on pure instinct. That was him, and he could just score a goal and just do the football and not necessarily kind of block out any particular vibes from either side around him. It was just an empty stadium and he was doing his thing. Because bear in mind, this is a man who didn't actually train and talked about how he was playing football with his dog. And then he went back and then just had a really good run.
But I mean,
so those are all my favourites.
That is, again, similar to that Bolton example. I think that those goals were, this kind of links to one of the listener questions that we had in. Those goals and that kind of COVID run was synonymous with when we were getting multiple people who'd learned how to do what Emmy had already learned to do. And, you know, we had Steepy, Emmy, Dow, all playing those little balls in to feet for him to kind of turn and finish first time. So, you know, he probably has never had that kind of end of that season is probably the time when he had the most highest quality. Is it XGA? Is that the right thing in terms of the best quality of assist? Am I saying that right? Anyway,
maybe
the highest quality of assists from the largest varying number of people who were kind of just setting up and enjoy. It must just be a joy to play with Teemu, like peak Teemu. Give us a goal, John, that is not the Bolton one.
Well, I want to touch on the Bolton one, and only because, so I think the Bolton goal that Hannah had alluded to and so eloquently described, I think I love it so much because every time I watch it, I notice something slightly different about it. And I watched it again this morning because I realized that it was my favorite team in goal and I was actually preparing for a podcast rather than just flouncing in 5 minutes before. And you know, and he starts in his own box. And 12 seconds later, he is stroking the ball home, having collected that wonderful through ball from Marco Stieperman and completely wrong footing the defenders and then just smashing it in. And it was just, he shouldn't have put that goal in the near post. There is no way he should have put that in the near post. The finish was to go far post across the goalkeeper, because if the keeper saves it, there might be someone else coming onto it who can kind of slot in the rebound. But it was just done with such a crispness, and you know, and it was just too quick for everyone. He was instinctively miles ahead of anyone on an intellectual level, really. You know, that it was such a lovely goal. If I have to pick another goal, I want to pick something really scuffy and scabby, and I will go for the goal, which I think was a 1-0 win against QPR in 18-19, and probably no one remembers it, but it's a lovely Jamal Lewis cross, and it kind of just hits Pookie maybe kind of in the stomach or kind of on the knee or something, and it just kind of fluffs it way, its way in. And we go on to win that game. We go on to, you know, kind of start another run which propels us up the league. Or that was the start of the time where it was like, oh, we're in the top six. Oh, we're quite near the top two. But it just felt like that was the point where he really kind of, it was liftoff for Pookie. I think that was the thing. It, you know, we got him on a free. He scored a couple of nice goals earlier in the season against like maybe Preston or Reading or someone like that. And it was like, oh, this lad looks quite good. And then he just kept scoring and kept scoring and kept scoring. And that QPR game was part of that, and part of him just being taken to our hearts, and probably around about the similar time that, you know, the Timu Pookie baby song, you know, kind of came out as well. It was just, it felt like it was his coming out moment.
Yeah, I was, that was one of the things that, one of the goals that occurred to me as well. But the,
we should probably should have talked about this beforehand, shouldn't we, and told each other what goals we were picking.
I didn't think it was that much of an issue because we just got such a rich vein of goals to choose from. So the one I actually wanted to recall was the Wigan away goal, which was the relatively late equaliser. So it wasn't a winner, and we didn't win that game. But that was a couple of games. That was in the middle of the run where we didn't have Emmy because he'd got sent off at, again, QPR, but the home game, 4-0 win, but with marred by Emmy. And obviously we already knew by then that we can't win without Emmy, which we something we never fixed, and you could argue we still haven't. But it was the fact that we'd taken 5,000 up there. You know, we'd had the fantastic campaign to get turn that stand yellow with all the scarves. And that away support really deserved something. And it was a bit of a misfiring, certainly first hour or so. We really hadn't got into our groove at all. Quite a lot of nerves had started to set in. We'd only drawn the previous game. And, you know, we were starting to get towards the business end of the season and we couldn't afford to drop any more points. It really would have been an issue. And I just remember the amount of relief that came from, well, right, we've avoided a real banana skin here of dropping points when we've had this big campaign to get all of the scars and to fill that stand in the way that we did. I think that is the reason that was worth bringing up, was because he wasn't always necessarily scoring the winner. It was just there was a towards the end of that first season where he's hitting all those goals, it was kind of the introduction of, well, we've always got Pookie. There's always Pookie. You know, even if everything else is going wrong, he'll latch onto a through ball. He'll latch onto a half-hearted kind of kick through the middle, as that was, and slot home, because actually he'll keep his head when everyone else is losing theirs. And even if it looks like this is a potential banana skin, he will pull something out of the bag for us. And, you know, to then go on and do things like, you know, scoring a hat-trick in the Premier League, and, you know, even in seasons that are lost, he would still give us amazing highlights and give us a reason to look back fondly on a season that ultimately ended in failure. And the disappointing thing of this season is I feel like if we'd made the decision to hold on to him, we didn't make enough of a big deal around making sure we use that last season the best we can. If we think, well, he might lose a touch of pace and he might lose a little bit of his sharpness, you know, if he's going to get a bit older, then we should have been able to mitigate for that, and we should have recruited around that, and we should be, you know, drilling our players to try and recreate those pooky goals that he's scored so often. So I feel like this season it wasn't necessarily on him at all that he hasn't been able to, you know, go through the season giving us lots of wonderful little things. Hannah, what about a memory of Pukki that's not necessarily goal related?
So I've got a couple. I don't know if one of these is allowed because it's not about.
It's all allowed.
It's not about actual real life Pukki. So I've got one actual real life Pukki memory. And then one sort of
fan fiction. I was going to say, is this fan fiction that we can
some sort of dream?
No. Or trust me, I've looked. It doesn't
Maybe
exist.
That can be like a bonus episode. I'll do a reading. But no, it's not fan fiction. It's, you'll see. I really like the when he got his hair cut by Grant Hanley. And there's that really good picture. I think we'd just secured promotion, or maybe it was, I can't remember if we'd won the title, but anyway. And there's a picture of Grant Hanley in his pants, shaving Timo Pukki's head. And I just feel like it's such a crucial artifact from that season, like a bit of Norwich folklore. And Grant Hanley just looks like he's concentrating so hard. And Timo just looks very relaxed about the whole thing. And I don't know, I just loved that whole... it just showed how kind of chilled he is, but also how, you know, I don't know if I necessarily would have assumed that Grant Hanley and Timo Pukki would get along. They're quite different characters, but somehow they were, you know, they're on a wavelength, as the whole team was. And so, yeah, I do, that would just always make me laugh.
And you know the full context of why he needed a short notice haircut and why it was Hanley that was doing it?
No. Was it an awards ceremony?
Yeah,
he was off
to pick up the Finland sports personality of the year, but because he's such an unassuming, wonderful, kind of humble guy, Hanley was effectively saying, you're not going to pick up some international award, you know, looking like that. Come on. And that's why he didn't go to some really expensive barbers or what have you. He got Hanley to do it in his pants.
Yeah, perfect. Like, it just sums him up. And then the other one, this, you said sort of the memory that you'll always think of when you hear Timo's name, and this is definitely one of them. I got married in September, and my dad did a speech, you know, as fathers of the brides do. And the brief was like, I just sort of said, you know, it can be like, it's just a welcome, keep it brief, nothing fancy. And he proceeded to do the most elaborate Timo Pukki bit. He like printed out his own pretend card from Timo Pukki with a big picture of his face on the front. He spoke Finnish. It was like he really committed. And the best thing was, I would say maybe 3% of the people in the room actually knew who he was talking about.
That makes it even better.
Exactly.
If it was like a huge Norwich contingent, it would be like, yeah, okay,
no,
cool. But that's better if there's like lots of like confused faces.
Exactly. And there's a great picture of him, and he's holding up this card, and it's got Timo's face on the front, and I'm looking baffled. My sister's very confused. And it's just very funny. It just will always make me laugh whenever I think about it. And you know, it's my three favorite men. It was my dad, my husband, and Timo Pukki. And that's exactly what I could have wanted on my wedding day. So yeah,
that is magic. Edie, can you beat that bizarre tale?
No, I just think like for me. It's more like the vibe of Pukki than a specific moment. Like, he's just adorable. He's fuzzy. He looks like he's been nesting somewhere the night before the game. Just curled up in a little ball of, like, feathers and twigs.
He is fuzzy. Fuzzy is such a good adjective.
He's very much... I mean, as someone who grew up loving the Moomins...
Okay.
He is very Moomin-ish. Like, he is the closest we'll ever get to having a Moomin around.
Like a fuzzy felt Moomin.
Yeah, Well, I think most Moomins were fuzzy, weren't they? They seemed quite plush. I don't know. They never illustrated them to that degree that we knew of texture, but maybe this was all individually imagined. But he was just like a little folk creature. I don't know if I ever remember hearing him talk. Maybe I did hear him talk and I forgot. But in my head, I've never heard him talk. And it's because he is like the kind of creature that appears like by moonlight to let you know of the coming of a good harvest.
Yeah.
And which is very odd.
Of course he is, yeah.
Yeah. And this is a sport where most young men, you just know by looking at them, they live in these houses where everything is very sparse. There's grey crushed velvet sofas and maybe there's a picture of a Peaky Blinder on the wall. It was just very weird to see this creature come along who you were like, how did you get into football?
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't follow hardly any of the bell end stereotypes of football, and you're right. Anecdotally, there's a lad that I'm very good friends with who sees him relatively regularly in kind of dad mode, and I'm happy to report that it's that kind of fuzzy creature before a good harvest is very much the vibes that is seen in play. You shake your head, punt, but you book Edie. This is what you expect.
I know. I'm pretty sure that that's not the first Moomin reference that she's made on the podcast either.
I'm not sure Fuzzy Felt has come out before though.
You mentioned Fuzzy Felt.
Completely. Look, when you
you're coming
when,
with me.
When you grab the reins and take this podcast in a direction, I want to be involved. I'm buying a ticket. I'm buying a season ticket to Edie's travels. John, give us a memory, please.
Oh, I can't follow those. Look, can I? There are many. Can you indulge me with three? Because I've just another one has popped into my head, and it is. So the first one, Thomas, you were there with me.
Thank you.
It was the presentation at City Hall. He is absolutely smashed out of his face.
Yep.
And we gave him...
Have you ever seen a drunk Moomin? Because we have.
Yeah, we have, yeah. And we gave him the Ben Stokes prepared, like kind of panini-style sticker of himself. And I've never seen someone drunkenly smile so much and you just know that they're so pissed and they have not got a clue what's going on. But they're loving it. He was absolutely enjoying it, and I will try and fish that picture out from somewhere because I've got it still on my camera roll. So that's one.
Steepy put his on, didn't he? He immediately took the sticker off and like stuck it to the front of his jersey.
Yeah, as did Kenny. Kenny had his on as well, which was quite funny.
It was a weird day.
It was a really weird day. Yeah. So there was that. There is also, it's kind of goal related, but the fact that he just picked up a Norwich City scarf off the turf at Carrow Road after I think it was the third goal against Ipswich when we beat them 3-0 and just kind of twirled it in front of the Barkley was lovely. But I think the one that kind of speaks to him as a human is the one that I'll probably remember most affectionately. So we beat Leicester, I think it was just before lockdown, we beat Leicester 1-0.
Jamal Lewis.
In the Premier League. And I was fortunate enough that a friend had said, oh, look, do you want to come in our box for the game, which is in the back of the South Stand. So, you know, you have a little bit of food or, you know, drinks afterwards or whatever. And I'd taken my eldest daughter and one of her really good friends. And like, she didn't get to go to the football much. So she was all wide eyed with, oh, my God, look, it's Premier League footballers and all the rest of it. And at the end, they kind of went out of the box and they were stood pitch side and watching the players kind of trudge across the pitch towards the players bar when they go after the game. And Todd walks past, doesn't look at them. I think my Amy might do the same. He's in his own little world. Ben Godfrey's got his big headphones on. It was almost like those viral clips that you've seen of Arsenal and Leeds footballers lately, just ignoring.
Now.
So, you know, we obviously were trendsetters in that regard, but you know, they were just walking past these two probably 10, 11 year old girls who were clearly trying to engage with them as footballers, you know, trying to go, oh, say hello to me, can we have a selfie, you know, that kind of thing. But they were too scared to initiate that conversation. It needed a nicely well-rounded human to just look at them and smile, and then that was their in. And he saw them from about 50 or 60 yards and he gave them a little wave. And then as he got closer,
he smiled, and I could see on their faces, they're like, can we ask him? And I just kind of nodded, and I kind of went, Tiamo, and like pointed at the kids. And he just came over, and he was really gracious, and just, you know, all it took was 60 seconds to have a couple of selfies and just smile and be shy and humble, but lovely, all in the same, you know, wrapped up in the same present. And I was just like, yeah, you're properly good. You're a really good human. And that's all I want sometimes out of my footballers. But so the fact that he scored 88, hopefully 89 or 90 goals by the time he leaves Norwich City is great. But if all Norwich players were as well-rounded and nice, lovely boys, as Edie likes to call them, then, yeah, I'd be well happy. So, yeah, that was my little moment with Pookie, or my daughter's moment with Pookie. And it was because I think it was the fact that preceded by it was your stereotypical 21st century modern-day footballer walking past. And look, you know, they're in their bubble or whatever you want to call them, but he's just, you know, complete throwback and not of that ilk at all.
Wonderful. So where's he going to go next? What do you reckon, Hannah? Where do you think he might be plying his trade and scoring his goals?
I have two theories about this. I think the first, possibly the most obvious option, is he wants one last shot at the Premier League, and I wouldn't blame him. And I could totally see, you know, a bottom half Premier League team going for him. He's going to be a free agent. He has proven that he can score in the Premier League. I think he'd be a very good, like, a backup option. I really hope he won't go to one of the newly promoted teams. I don't know why. That just feels a bit too close to home. And I don't really like Burnley or Sheffield United or, I mean, maybe like if Luton go up or something, that'd be fun. But again, I can't see him going there. So I think he could be, it could be like a Fulham. I feel like he needs to go somewhere with like a little bit of style. And I feel like a London club. I don't know. I just, something about that I potentially could see. Or, and my dad suggested this, and then the more I thought about it, the more I was into it and thought actually it could be a goer, is Villa, reuniting with Emmy at Villa. I think they could potentially, I mean, it depends where they end up. If they end up in, you know, I don't think they're going to end up in Europe, but they could be at a slightly higher level maybe than he can expect to be at 30, however old he is, 32 years old. But again, I think it'd be a really good backup. They don't really have a backup striker. I think they've just got Watkins. And I know they just sold Danny Ings so that Watkins could be the main man, but I don't think Pookie would be like a threat to him in any way. And, you know, him and Emmy linking up again, I think would be pretty beautiful. But then my other theory is that he is winding down. I know these are like opposing theories, but I think it just could go either way. And so he might want to go somewhere a bit more close to home. I follow his wife on Instagram. So this is, I'm also using this intelligence that I've gleaned from that.
Brilliant.
And I think she really liked living in Copenhagen when he was at Brøndby. And so I also think that could potentially be, you know, a route he could be going back to, somewhere a bit more familiar, maybe somewhere they want to set down, you know, put down roots, because maybe they're a bit fed up of moving. And so, yeah, that's my theory, back to somewhere like Brøndby or lower half Premier League.
Okay. What about you, Edie?
The idea of him going to London just feels sort of, I don't know, like, would he be okay in London? I'd just be a bit, like, worried. Like,
maybe he could go and hang out with the Wombles.
Well, they're not real, though.
Oh, of course. So, whereas Moomins are obviously, yeah, factual. Forgot about that.
Yeah, duh. Sorry. But, yeah, I think way to start wrapping up his possessions in a little knotted handkerchief. It's sort of, it feels like definitely Europe is the place to go. But I do remember him saying that he wanted, this is ages and ages ago, and I made a little mental note because I was like, oh yeah, you can't have him. I think he said that his pal is the goalkeeper for Bayer Leverkusen. And then, like, that's, he wants to go where his friend is. And that always made a bit of an impact on me, because like it's sort of I don't know, the idea that he can go somewhere and speak Finnish.
Well, my
just to one person.
My
so,
theory on
so
that
cute.
Is that he will go and speak Finnish, and I think maybe there is a reason that he hasn't been being started, and it's because he is going to go to a Finnish club, and they've only just started their season. They're only like 4 or 5 games in, so maybe actually because he hasn't been particularly that fussed about not getting game time recently, because he's gearing up to go into to a Finnish season. So that is my suggestion, that he goes in, because I personally think that he perfectly apt theories, the being with one friend in his handkerchief possessions and speaking to his goalkeeper friend, and also going and being a backup striker for a team who needs, you know, is going to be going at it on three fronts if it's European football, or when I can't see one of the newly promoted teams going for him. That's the one thing I think he's a tough, I mean, I would, if I was the fan of them, of course, but I think he's maybe a tough sell to a newly promoted team. Whereas maybe an established Premier League team as the second striker or the third striker, it makes sense. I just think that actually a team who probably wants to be the main man if he can. And I think he might go to a team where they would be delighted for him to be the main man. And that's why my guess is that he goes to one of the teams at the top of the Finnish table, no names of which I'm going to have a go at pronouncing. They're all acronymized, like SJK and HCL and things like that. Punt, where's he going?
Well, I can't claim credit for either of these theories, but I like them both. Claire Thomas put out on the Twitters that she thought he may be reunited with a certain former head coach of ours, Mr. Farker, at Borussia Mönchengladbach. And I responded to her to say yes, because they both deserve to be happy. And I think they would be happy together again. I think that would be a wonderful move. Mönchengladbach are on the lookout for a striker, according to Farke himself. He would be free. That would fit. But also, Adam Brandon had put out into the ether that he thought that an MLS move, because this might be Pukki's last financial, financially motivated move, might work. And so, only because Timu looked so resplendent in the third kit of 2018-19, that lovely lime green number, I'm going to say the Seattle Sounders, because they have a similar coloured kit.
Well, if it was a Farker reunion, then I would be very up for an ACN trip to go and watch the debut or whichever game is likely to feature him. That would be a really nice use of time. Okay, so there were some listener questions. John, do you want to pick out a couple?
Yeah, I'd say we've dealt with a lot.
Yeah, we have covered a few.
Or we've certainly covered the same ground. I think something that we haven't talked about, and it is our very own Nick Hayhoe, who's written an excellent piece up on the website today. For those who haven't read it already, I would thoroughly recommend popping over to the site. But he asks, is Timo Norwich's greatest ever striker? He's fourth in the all-time goals list, but he has the best goals to games ratio in the top five by a fair way. Mm. And that's a fair way, having not scored a goal for quite a long time. I can only think of a couple that rival him in my own supporting lifetime. Hannah, I'm presuming that's just a resounding yes from you.
I mean, yeah, what an absolute tap in. I feel like I just can't answer this question objectively at all. But
this is why we had you on.
I definitely think, I mean, I don't know, number one greatest is a big call. But for me, and also, you know, in my lifetime, I'd say probably could make a very decent shout for that. I think the thing that makes him, like you say, the games to goal ratio is very good, but I think he also, and this sort of gets a bit overlooked sometimes, is he is really good at assists. He's really good at making goals as well, and that's a massive contribution. Even this season, I think he's only got like 10, well, I say only, I still think that's a decent return in a very dodgy team, but I think he's got 10 goals, but then he's also got 8 assists, I think. And I think that, yeah, just shows his value isn't just in scoring goals. Even if it were just in scoring goals, I think he would still be up there, absolutely. But I think that's just such added value. I think he gives so much beyond just the goals. And I think, I don't know, it's so hard, isn't it, to extrapolate him from the teams that he has come to represent. He's such a sort of talisman of those amazing championship seasons. And I think you can't help but sort of factor that in when you think about these players. You think about, like you say, you know, we've said this whole podcast is the memories that they give you. And I mean, the same, that 18-19 season, I haven't been as enthused about a team as I was then since I was a child. You know, it was like, and I had the same excitement and the same enthusiasm. And like when I was a kid and I sort of first discovered Norwich, like even like seeing the colours yellow and green was exciting because it was like a little link to the team. Yeah. And it was like a little secret sign. And I don't know, and I sort of went back to that again. And like you say, I consumed everything, like all the content. And it was, I was sort of having a bit of a rough time, and it was such an escape. And I could, you know, for 90 minutes or whatever, I could be outside of myself for a bit, and I could just completely give myself over to this incredibly likeable, enjoyable football and football team. And yeah, they were just so special, and I think he completely represents that and everything that was great about those teams, not just in his football but in his Moomin-ish personality as well. And so yeah, I think absolutely you could very, very easily make an argument that he's our greatest striker. Yeah.
Edie, do you think Teemu is the bestest Everest to score lots of goals for Norwich City Football Club?
Two factors opposing. The first factor, there is one crucial piece of the puzzle. He needs to hang around afterwards. For us, we need someone. Ooh, we need to just watch him walking his dog after, you know, 10 years. He needs to sort of be absorbed into the fabric of Norwich, that is a factor that I don't think is going to happen for him. However, he was like just the leader of the most perfect band of weirdos ever to exist at one time for Norwich, who are the biggest band of weirdos. Mm. He was the weirdo of the weirdos. He was even weirder than Grant Holt. I just think it's like, in terms of personal branding, he fit into everything we were about, in that he was mysterious and weird and clearly funny. And just like, I think if he'd have gone anywhere else, he just would have felt a bit like a fish out of water, whereas we're all fish out of water in Norwich. So that's why it all worked. That's why Farker and he managed to connect in that way of like, well, we're in this really weird place and there's just weird stuff going on. And I thought there would be boutiques. I thought there would be nightclubs. Apparently there's just a park. It's full of dinosaurs. Let's just make the best of it. And then everyone just gets so excited to see them that they realize that they're in a very special place.
Well, on that point,
and that was this perfect moment that will not be repeated for a long time, and he was part of it.
Wait, so, yeah, and he led it. I think that is a perfect way of describing that movement of Norwich weirdness that was that particular squad and that kind of narrative. But on the point of getting excited to see him, I actually wonder, my counter to your counter, my oppose to your oppose, is actually the fact that he won't be coaching his kids football and walking his dog. Because you do see the legends around quite a lot, and obviously some of them are ambassadors for the club, and some of them are great human beings, and it's great to run into them. However, I wonder whether or not he might be, whether or not the club can do it, and whether or not he'd even want to. Imagine how magic it will be if actually he does go back towards his homeland, and that is where he spends the remainder of his career and most of the time bringing up his kids,
like Aslan.
But so maybe Aslan Moomin does come back every sort of 4 or 5 years or every 3 or 4 years or, you know, at milestone anniversaries, whatever, the excitement and the joy to see him and, you know, to be in and around the club would be that much greater than, you know, someone like a Holt or a Hucks or a Jeremy Goss or someone who is effectively at or a Drury or a Lappin or whatever, who are all fantastic servants of the club and great people, but we do see him a lot. So
I think that's a very starry eventuality, and I just don't think we're that starry. I think I think in order for him to become like this level of reality,
so you think he might retire back here? So that's most likely with one of Hannah's examples. So he could, for example, maybe they have put roots down here in their opinion, and he does go somewhere English club wise and plays somewhere for a couple of years, and then they kind of come back here and this is where he feels kind of comfortable and where they want to be. But I mean, you've got the Insta inside scoop on that, so I'll go with your steer on that if you think that's even possible.
The thing I would say to all of that is I don't think that he needs to come back for us to feel that Norwich is an important place for him, an important team for him. And I think we should remember that. And I think that's part of, again, that's the sort of the Pookie magic. And that whole story was that he, along with a lot of those weirdos in that team, we knew that we were giving them something really special, and that there was a mutual thing there. It wasn't that, you know, they were deigning to grace our club and they were dragging us back to the Premier League. We were giving a lot of these players a second chance or a first chance, you know, with the young ones. And you know, we gave a team who was all right before he came to us, but he wasn't anything special, I'd say.
Free transfer,
a free transfer,
a bargain,
an absolute bargain. And we gave him the chance to play in the Premier League. You know, we gave him I think playing regularly at the level he did at Norwich really helped him for Finland. You could kind of say that, I mean, I'm not going to claim responsibility for Finland qualifying for a major championship, major tournament for the first time ever, but I think it was all sort of part of it. And
it'd be weird if you personally claimed responsibility for it. I mean, that would be...
I mean, I have got friends in high places, but not that high. and yeah, so I think, yeah, he doesn't have to come back to... If he doesn't, I don't think that's sort of a sense that he didn't feel that at Norwich, and I don't think there's a sense that he doesn't appreciate what the club gave him. I think there's always been a sense of that, and I think we can, you know, enjoy that and be proud of that as well. And again, yeah, I think I really like that whole aspect as well, was that it was a mutual sort of a mutual rise, and I think that's pretty great.
Okay.
It's the passing alchemy. It's like we were never going to be able to cling to it. It was a magical moment that you cannot put in a box.
Well, it's a sort of 4 to 5 year moment. Any final thoughts from you, Punt, on the wonderful man, Timu Pukki?
There's just one more question that I wanted to touch on, which was from Matthew McGregor, who is a regular questioner of the podcast. And he asks, can we answer, will we ever, ever fall in love again? And I think my answer would be, yes, we absolutely will, but I'm not sure that we will love as hard again, because it doesn't... Look, I am 44 years of age. I've never experienced a season like 2018-19. It was the best. I just can't see it ever being that good again. So yes, we will, but I think we're always just going to look back misty-eyed at Timu and his band of weirdos.
Yeah, speaking of misty-eyed, it will be poignant on Monday, and I do think that it will be a shame if there is, to say it lightly, if there is any kind of negativity that kind of perforates what should just be singing Timu songs, and maybe singing some of the old 18-19 songs, and a la singing the Huck song at Christmas. You know, I have thought a few times this season that some of this, you know, this has been a terrible season for songs, really bad, because there hasn't been the performances on the pitch. And
I do like the Gabriel Sarra one there.
Yeah, one decent song. You know,
he's the only one who's deserved a new song.
But that's
let's
the
be
thing.
Honest.
Like, he's the only one who's given, you know, going back to that kind of alchemy and that magic. He's the only one who maybe gives us the impression that maybe some magic is passing through our club, and he could be about to, you know, rise into one of Europe's really interesting players, either at Premier League level or European level. He really does seem like he's got a ceiling, maybe either above where where he currently is playing, or we are seeing the very best of him, either of which is the sort of thing that creates a song. And to your point, Hannah, in terms of what we gave them songs, we gave them the identity of being, you know, some of those have gone on to do other things like an Emmy, and some of them have kind of gone into obscurity and you've never really heard from again, because, you know, we gave them the best season or two seasons of their career where they got the most love and they, you know, got the most points and scored the most goals, etc. So there it does go two ways. And with that in mind, I just really hope that it's not going to be quite to the same degree as the Wesley game, because of the, you know, the situation that we were at when we said goodbye to Wesley. And for my mind, in terms of the answer to, is he the greatest striker? Yes, wholeheartedly he is. I mean, it isn't, and I don't think it's that close, because of the fact that some of the other people who own those scoring slots did so in far less glorified eras. And yes, they've got some incredible seasons or an individual season, but the fact that he was part of this moment, like John described, of it just being the purest sense of falling in love with football again. So I just hope that we can have towards that level of emotion on Monday, and that we probably do need to win. We probably do need to be winning for most of the game in order for it to feel like that in the stands, and to suppress how cross with everyone, you know, cross with those in charge, a lot of the fans are. But I do thank you very much, Hannah, for giving us your memories and giving us your emotion and fantastic stories from, you know, your wedding and likewise, Edie, you know, fantastic stories akin to Moomin's and Fuzzy Felts, which I know I did help kind of corroborate that they are factual creatures, not silly creatures like Wombles. John, I acknowledge you exist. I acknowledge you were there at the City Hall when we saw a very, very drunk Timu Pukki. And yes, that was the greatest season of my life too. And I don't think it will be matched. However, we might get something just as good again. It just might take us a little while. And here's hoping that this time next year, we're considering what pose David Wagner's statue will be of. And that we've fallen back in love with Stuart Webber after he's found another 25 goal a season free transfer from the Nigerian Nationwide League Division 2. But in the meantime, enjoy saying goodbye Monday, enjoy the memories that come flooding back, and saying thank you, team. Until next time, mind how you go.